doing here. Abby, Malloy, Lopez, Irvine. A mix of the living and the dead. The place was empty but for a couch, a refrigerator, a wooden kitchen table, and a chair that I salvaged from a dumpster in the city. My friend next door, down a faint trail through cactus, offered the place for me to work. My gal saw a picture I texted and said it looked like I was writing in a Turkish prison, bare earthen floors and walls. She didn't see the sliding glass door I left open most of the day, and the clouds of spring-green creosote bushes and big padded prickly pear cactus growing to the edge of worn steps. These weren't landscaping plants. They'd been growing here for centuries, swelling and shrinking with every rain and drought. Ribbed arms and heads of saguaros studded the skyline, where Gila woodpeckers and curve-billed thrashers kept up conversation, and quail bobbed on the ground like sly pear-sized hens. The Sonoran Desert in southern Arizona this time of year can be a circus. You have to get up sometimes and close the door to stay focused. At night, my lamp on inside, pages rattled out of my keyboard. I looked up at a fox as it passed sleekly by, its nose almost touching the glass of the door slid closed. It glanced inside and trotted through creosote bushes where the dark of the desert took it back in. A block away was the rest of Tucson, the desert crunched into lawns and landscape gravels. You could draw a line dividing here from there, light and darkness, mountains huddled back from the city and green from the rains and cool days of March. The other direction, roofs. I remember when I was a kid seeing road signs at the edge of Phoenix after the last subdivisions, upon which people spray-painted, "Save Our Desert." "Curve ahead, save our desert." "Do not enter when flooded, save our desert." I hadn't put two and two together. I didn't know why the desert needed to be saved. Those places are gone now, stripped and replaced, little sense of what might have once been there. I don't know who did the graffiti in the 1970s, but when I was a kid, I imagined them dressed in bandanas, coming out of the desert, pushing against the city, defending forests of ironwood and saguaros, quail bursting into the air like little jets. Driving back with groceries to the house where I was working, turning from pavement onto dirt, I stopped at a Diamondback Rattler, half on and half off asphalt. It was drawing up warmth as the day ended. Not a good idea with cars coming by. Did it know the dangers here? Or was the snake not thinking car, tires, weight, death? I backed up until I could see along the length of its body from my rolled down window. I told it to get off the road. It didn't. I opened the door, only got a head flinch. The snake laid out more or less straight, an arm and a half long with a mature stack of rattles at the end nearest me. "Go," I said, waving my arms, and the rattler reluctantly moved. I got out and shooed it along as it picked up speed with a few half-hearted buzzes of its tail. As the head went into the base of a sprawling creosote, out of range of a strike, I took a notion to reach down and touch the rattle. Let the thing buzz through my hand. How often does that happen? I could use a little snake medicine in this book, I thought. It was not something I'd ever done, but seemed doable. Following the slip of the tail, 2 inches away from grazing my fingers, I said out loud, "No, what rattlesnake wants its rattle touched?" "No molestar la fauna," reads the sign outside of a biosphere reserve in the desert of northern Mexico, a few hours from here. The phrase rolls off the tongue, "Don't molest the animals. Don't pick up desert turtles or pet rattlesnakes. The flora, while we're at it, needs no manhandling or groping, no more stately dead ironwoods stripped for campfire."